previously on Moth Hotel.
It was decided that we could not stand idly by and allow our colleague Melton Thornaby to be abducted by aliens.
A plan is now in place to launch Moth Hotel into space.
Please hold while Moth Hotel counts down to launch.
Some folks believe that Moth Hotel originated in the stars.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, lift off.
Moth Hotel.
Melton Thornaby has been abducted by aliens. He was midway through reviewing a very engaging bottle of Chateau Margaux 2006 when he was engulfed in an intense orange light from above and unceremoniously sucked off the planet. There will be consequences.
You'd think floating in zero gravity sounds thrilling. It isn't. Everything drifts slowly, including you. You try to grab a cup of coffee. It hovers. You chase it. Hours later, you're still chasing it. There are no bars, no beaches, no street performers juggling flaming swords. You look out the window and stars, millions of stars. They don't move. They don't do anything. Eventually, you realize the most exciting part is your own breathing. Space travel, endlessly quiet, infinitely repetitive, mildly uncomfortable, and spectacularly underwhelming.
Houston, we have a problem. My balls are floating away. My balls are floating away. Over.
I shall now read the minutes of the last meeting. Item 1. It was noted that since the start of the second series, this podcast appears to have shifted towards a more linear rather than non-linear format. We voted to take no action and wait to see how this pans out.
In the event of an emergency, please follow the procedure below, although its success is not guaranteed. Step 1. Secure your oxygen mask unless the emergency concerns oxygen itself, in which case, remove the mask immediately and exhale politely into the void. Step 2. Fasten your harness. If the harness resists, remind it gently that you are the captain of your own fate. Step 3. Locate the nearest exit. It may present itself as a door, French windows, or an unconvincing mirage of your childhood kitchen. All are valid.
I'm Melton Thornaby. It is now 6 weeks since I was abducted by aliens. They remain very polite. Almost too polite, if such a thing can be said of creatures with translucent cartilage faces and eyes like unfurnished apartments. Empty, echoing, and forever waiting for someone to move in. Their bodies are composed of a pale, rubbery fabric, stitched in places by seams that appear decorative, though I cannot rule out that they are surgical repairs. When they stand in a group, and they always stand in a group, they resemble laundry hung out in a windless void, swaying just slightly, as if rehearsing the idea of motion rather than committing to it. Their mouths are vertical. When they smile, it looks like the slow opening of elevator doors that lead nowhere. Their voices are carried not through air, but by vibrating one's teeth from the inside, which is intimate in a way I did not request. Despite appearances, they are friendly. They insist that I call them the parish. I do not know why. They bow to me every time I wake up, as though I have returned from the dead. I suspect occasionally they think I have.
It's me again, the caretaker. I've always been the caretaker. They are yet to tell me if I'll be required for this episode. If you need me, I'll be in the maze.
Here is today's mission update. Moth Hotel now glides, tentatively, through the unlit corridors of the universe. Though glide may be too generous a word, it's more of a low-grade shuffle, as if the stars themselves are reluctant to welcome us into their realm. In the role of self-appointed captain, I have requested that we stop announcing our exact coordinates, as apparently someone, or something, has been following the echo of our transmissions. In terms of logistics, the oxygen recyclers are making a sound not unlike a human sigh. And though engineering insists it's normal, No one has yet explained why the sigh is in perfect rhythm with our heartbeat monitors. Our food stores are sufficient, but the freeze-dried pasta has begun to rehydrate itself at unpredictable intervals, which has unnerved several of the cleaning staff. As for celestial events, a black hole politely passed us on the starboard side earlier today. It tipped its hat, or something resembling one, before collapsing into itself with a kind of weary dignity. And now to the matter that concerns us all. The search for Melton Thornaby continues. No transmissions, no sightings, no trace. Yet the navigational computer insists it can still detect his shadow walking just ahead of the ship, though there is nothing there. We would be ill-advised to follow it. That concludes today's update. Please remember, if you hear a voice calling your name in the ventilation ducts, do not answer. It is not who you think it is.
Turn right in 8.6 light years, then continue past the nebula of mild disappointment, whose clouds ripple faintly, as if sighing at the universe's inefficiencies. Reduce speed slightly to avoid planet Ponderosa, where the trees are sentient, polite, and entirely unwilling to speak. At 0.3 parsecs, adjust course to slide past asteroid 42b, which rotates in the opposite direction for reasons known only to itself. Veer starboard toward the twin suns of Riga 11, which wink intermittently and with unmistakable judgment. When you reach the orbit of Claudius Moon, acknowledge it silently. Its appreciation is subtle, but sincere. Engage thrusters gently to navigate the comet of mild inconvenience, which will escort you ceremoniously in a slow, undulating arc. Then, prepare for deceleration. Adjust final approach to the space station of lost souls. You have arrived at your destination.
I cannot stop dreaming about the moon. In my dream last night, Buzz Aldrin was there too. He is always there in the moon dreams. I was with Buzz being followed by shadows shaped like ancient satellites, their metal shells peeling like bark, leaking faint glows of data no human could read. They drifted above Buzz and I, silent but insistent, and whenever we stopped moving, the craters beneath us rippled like a disturbed pond. I realized the moon itself was alive, in a way that was patient and terrible. It didn't care about me or Buzz, but it found us just interesting enough to watch for an instant. Every time I blinked, the landscape shifted, rearranging itself into impossible geometries, until I finally understood. The moon doesn't exist for humans. It exists for itself, and for anyone foolish enough to dream about it. Then suddenly Buzz was naked and beckoning for me to come to him. We embraced, and the moon was suddenly naked, too. I awoke on damp sheets.
You're tuned to Moth FM 96.8. Coming up, it's The Moth Breakfast with Moxie crimefighter Gillette, followed at 10 a.m. by The Morning Show with Zuma Nesta Rock Garden. It's The Moth Brunch at midday with Bear Blaze Portsmouth Harbor, followed by The Afternoon Show with Moonblood Night Creature at 2, and Moth Drive Time at 4 with Blue Ridge Ivy Carter Remington. The Moth News and Moth Weather on the hour, every hour from the Moth Newsroom with Applecrust Pine Martin. And that's your weekday menu for Tuesday on Moth FM, where the mothness never ends.
While Moth Hotel is in transit, we have devised various leisure activities for the guests and residents to help pass the time. Tonight's feature is low gravity wrestling. Two competitors square off in a central ring where gravity has been dialed down to a fifth of Earth's. What follows looks less like wrestling and more like a silent, floating argument in slow motion. Strength is important, but balance is crucial. A mistimed shove can send both fighters spinning end over end, grappling awkwardly like lost luggage. Pinning an opponent is not so much about strength as it is about positioning, pressing them to the wall and holding until the referee counts to 10. The spectators tend to cheer most for the accidental collisions, a flailing knee catching the ceiling, or an opponent launching themselves triumphantly forward only to glide harmlessly past, unable to stop. Matches are short, rarely longer than 5 minutes, as exhaustion sets in quickly when every muscle must double as a stabilizer. The winner receives a pouch of rehydrated protein gel and a Mars bar. The loser drifts for a while, still attempting to right themselves, cheered politely by the onlookers.
Time for Relativity Speaking with me, Angela Lansbury. Today I'm talking about time dilation. Sounds complicated, but don't worry, I'll make it simple. Imagine you're at a cosmic bus stop. One bus is moving close to the speed of light, the other is parked at the edge of a black hole's gift shop. If you hop on the fast bus, time for you slows down. You'll age like a fine cheese left in the fridge. Slow, subtle, slightly worrying. Meanwhile, your friend at the gift shop is aging normally, possibly complaining about overpriced asteroid trinkets. So technically, you could leave them behind for a century, come back, and they'll ask why your hair is suddenly gray, but your sandwich is still fresh. That's relativity, that's time. And that, my dear space travelers, is all you need to know. I need a drink.
During its travels through the cosmos this week, Moth Hotel has collected the following artifacts of interest. Drifting near the rings of Zenith 3, a collection of crystalline umbrellas was found. They refract the star's light into patterns that resemble personal ambition. Each umbrella bears microscopic etchings indicating it was once owned by a bureaucrat of interstellar import. They appear entirely ornamental, but when opened during solar eclipses, they chatter quietly in Morse code, asking price. 2,000 intergalactic credits. Also, deep beneath the neon sands of Viridian 8, an autonomous teapot was excavated, made of an alloy that resists heat, cold, and memory itself. It refuses to pour unless asked politely in three different languages, one of which may not yet exist. It is valued by collectors of absurdity, though insurance companies remain hesitant. Rumor has it, if you listen closely, the teapot whispers stock exchange tips for planets that have no stock markets.
Ground floor, inflatable hats, singing toasters, and glow-in-the-dark trousers. First floor, self-stirring teacups, reversible pants, and edible stationery. Second floor, hovering armchairs, dog tuxedos, and fish-scented candles. Third floor, Alan Titchmarsh.
We just encountered a very unusual planet. Here is my analysis. The surface at first glance resembles a cracked porcelain teacup, white with hairline fractures filled in by some black tar-like substance that appears to ooze upward, not downward, which is inconvenient for the laws of physics. The equatorial region is marked by a series of giant concentric ridges as though the planet were dropped from a great height onto some celestial tile floor. The atmosphere is breathable, provided one has no aversion to the faint taste of iron filings. Our sensors detect a steady drizzle of ash, though curiously there are no volcanoes. When collected in containers, the ash rearranges itself into simple diagrams of mechanical devices, none of which function. As for the population, we observed thin, spindly figures, possibly humanoid, who do not speak but appear to mumble quietly to themselves. Their villages are built from stacked mirrors, angled in such a way that no outsider can see the inhabitants directly. Only their reflections, which are somehow taller, older, and vaguely disapproving. One final note. The planet's day lasts exactly 13 hours and 13 minutes. The locals celebrate sunrise not with ceremony, but with silence so complete that our instruments registered it as a minor gravitational event. Recommendation. Mark this world as habitable, but with reservations.
We have a new piece of technology aboard the Moth Hotel, the Coincidence Regulator. It occupies a full cargo bay, buzzing and clunking with improbable precision. The regulator's function is to keep the ship's coincidences at a manageable level. Left unmonitored, coincidences proliferate during long voyages. Staff bump into each other carrying identical books, speak the same words at once, or find their dreams synchronizing until half the mess hall wakes up, convinced they are married to the same ghost. The regulator works by redistributing probability. It siphons off excess synchronicity and expels it as harmless statistical noise into deep space. Scientists explain this with the phrase causal drainage, though none can say what becomes of the coincidences once released. For safety, the machine stores a small cache of coincidences for emergencies. A misplaced tool might reappear just when needed, or two unrelated phenomena might converge neatly to avert disaster. But the manual warned against relying on it too much. The regulator is forgetful and sometimes issues coincidences at random, like three unrelated members of staff sneezing in exact unison, or the uncanny reappearance of a song no one admits to playing.
Please comply with the following instructions to exit this podcast. Key your exit code very carefully. Your code is 34BIG G 56 2 asterisk little K big K 7 6 3 big D 5 7 little B exclamation mark 7 6 dash ampersand 2 4 uppercase Alanis Morissette. Please close the door on the way out.
Moth Hotel was written and produced by Brian Luff, music by Kevin MacLeod, voice technology by 11 Labs. All celebrity voices were impersonated. Moth Hotel was a Sowerby and Luff production for Studio Senseless.
All complaints, confessions, and contributions should be emailed to mothhotel@studiosenseless.com.